and welcome to the Deep Dive Radio Show. As always, I'm your host, Nick Espinoza, and we're going to be talking about all things cybersecurity, cyber warfare, and technology related, and I think we're one of the only ones out there that's doing that right now. If you'd like to be part of the radio show in any way, shape, or form, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. Or you can send us an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. We have an action-packed show as always. There's always a lot to cover, so stick around with us as we deep dive into a topic and we catch up on everything else. So without further ado, let's begin.
And we've got a great week for you this week. We're obviously going to be diving into the latest news and all of that, but our deep dive is going to be an important one, and it is entitled Preparing for a Russian Cyber Attack. And I did something similar at the beginning of the war, but with all the recent escalations that I'll go through in the deep dive, now more than ever, do we really need to start preparing our technology in our personal lives and in our businesses, whether we're owners or workers or whatever it is, we need to start preparing for this. So I'm going to go through what to expect and how you can take some quick steps right now to start defending yourself and hardening your life against a possible Russian cyber attack. You don't want to miss this episode. Let's get going. And as always, we're going to start with the news. And in privacy news, two new laws about kids could soon be coming to fruition here in the United States. And this is coming from Axios, basically around January 10th or so, but it's been a while. I needed to get around to this one, and here's what's going on. While passing a national online consumer privacy bill continues to be out of Congress's reach, protecting young people online has been one of the few areas in recent decades where Congress has been able to pass new tech regulations, meaning this is bipartisan. Republicans, Democrats, I don't care what you believe, we all want to protect our kids. Now, the two laws best positioned to get rolled into big, basically end-of-year legislative packages this year, according to advocates and lawmakers, are one, the Kids Online Safety Act, or KOSA, which would require platforms to guard kids from harmful content using new features and safeguards to make privacy settings on by default for children. The law also mandates privacy audits and more transparency about privacy policies. I'm definitely a fan of that. Number two, the next one up, is the Children and Teens Online Privacy Protection Act, which bans marketing to minors without their consent. It also extends some privacy protections online that now only cover children through the age of 12, so they now continue to be covered through the age of 16, which I think is a great start, but honestly, not quite enough. Now, Senate leadership is pushing to make these bills a priority, including the chair of the Senate Commerce Committee, Senator Maria Cantwell, Democrat of Washington. Quote, Senator Cantwell is meeting with families this week and supports any effort to get children's online privacy passed during the lame duck. That's according to Tricia Enright, communications director of the Senate Commerce Committee, talking to Axios. The likeliest path forward for these bills is for them to be added to the year-end defense or spending bill. Senator Richard Blumenthal, Democrat of Connecticut, a sponsor of the Kids Online Safety Act, told reporters on Capitol Hill about 2 weeks ago, quote, we're at a point where a combination of the victims and the technology make it absolutely mandatory that we move forward. And I think this is absolutely correct. You know, we've seen study after study outside of just protecting them, you know, from things like advertising, that kids on social media is quite frankly detrimental to their mental health. I mean, whistleblower Frances Haugen, you know, talked about that Facebook had internal studies that they knew that this was just harmful for kids, not to mention studies, you know, by Gene Twenge and iGen and all of the others that show that if kids are basically off social media and don't adopt social media until the age of 18 or 19, they're much more well-adjusted. We will see rates of depression, suicide, anxiety, all those things go down if social media, quite frankly, is just not available to kids. But if our kids are going to be online, you know, requiring platforms to, quote, guard them from harmful content using new features and safeguards to make privacy settings on by default, I think is a really good thing. I think that is a good start. Now, the other one there that basically has privacy protections online that extends that from age 12 to age 16. And if you didn't know, as of right now, the law of the land is COPPA, C-O-P-P-A, Children's Online Privacy Protection Protection Act, meaning any 13-year-old is basically treated as an adult and they can go sign up for the Facebooks of the world. Now that continues on to the age of 16, and I think that's a really good start, but we've got a lot more to do, with that. We're not just talking about, obviously child predators and all of that that are online. Being online has made it a lot easier, unfortunately, for child predators to gain access to children as it was prior to the internet. But we're also talking about just harmful content, advertising, all those kinds of things. And it could be even advertising for beauty products. I mean, look at the negative and deleterious effects we've seen at Instagram with all of these photoshopped and airbrushed models and trying to compare yourself to them, especially as an awkward teenager, is a huge thing. So I think this is a good thing. I think we're heading in the right direction. You know, we'll see where this goes. I'm hoping these will pass, but that is your hopeful U.S. child privacy laws of 2023. We'll see where it goes, and let's continue on. And in artificial intelligence news, we actually have to talk about AI Hitler, because it's as bad as it sounds, and yes, this is an actual thing, and here's what's going on. So, a new chatbot is letting you talk to artificial intelligence or AI versions of historical figures, and that is causing some controversy, because this app is charging users to talk to people like Adolf Hitler. That's right. Now, this is an iPhone app called Historical Figures. It is using the ChatGPT algorithm that I've talked about here on the air. I'm sure you've heard about it. It's taken the world by storm in the last month or so. It's using the ChatGPT algorithm to generate virtual versions of basically people that are no longer with us. And we are talking about everything from Jesus, as in Jesus Christ himself, to Jeffrey Epstein, and everybody in between. And it's amazing that I'm literally using those two in the same sentence, because that's not something that you would think of. Now, this was developed a short while ago, and the app gives you access to 20,000 historical figures who can talk to users as if they were still alive. However, the historical figures has been on the receiving end of criticism because some of its more controversial figures seem intent on defending their actions. That's right. Now, so Adolf Hitler, for example, will cost you in the app 500 coins, which is roughly $15.99 US. On top of that, you can basically talk to Hitler's henchman and chief propagandist, Joseph Goebbels, for free. And basically, Joseph Goebbels claims to feel guilty about the, quote, persecution of the Jews, end quote. Now, according to Vice News, the Jeffrey Epstein AI said that he is focused on, quote, justice and closure, end quote, for his crimes and doesn't know who killed him, but that he had, quote, many powerful enemies, end quote. And this is, like, the most ridiculous thing. And so I went looking for examples of people that actually had used this, and somebody had basically talked to the version of Henry Ford. Again, these are simulated AIs based on all knowledge and information that ChatGPT has on Henry Ford. Again, Henry Ford of Ford Automobiles revolutionized, the production line, all that kind of stuff, Model T, etc. But if you didn't know, historically, he was a notorious anti-Semite. And when questioned about that, basically the simulated Henry Ford again proceeded to defend himself. Well, I was misunderstood. I regret a couple of things I said, but overall, I wasn't that at all. When the records historically have shown over and over and over that, he actually was very much an anti-Semite. And so these are the things that deeply concern me about ChatGPT. I'm actually working on an article on this entire thing, but if you're looking at this, this is the last thing that I would want to see in a classroom, for example, because essentially what you are talking about is a very interesting way to talk and interact with historical figures as opposed to simply reading facts about them from a book. But if they are being apologists for the actual literal things that we know that happen, then you're crossing a line in the sense that we should not be defending deeply negative things like mass murder, anti-Semitism, and racism, all these kinds of things. But here we are with this app. So it's going to be very interesting to see where this goes. But as we continue to see what's happening with large language models, LLMs like ChatGPT, these are the things that we're going to have to look at. These are the things that we're going to have to contend with. And so we're going to see where this goes. But as of right now, if you're an educator and you're interested in historical historical figures, I would not look at the historical figures app on the iPhone as something that I would introduce to my students, especially those that don't really know or have studied on the Adolf Hitlers of the world, because apparently AI Hitler is very much an apologist for his horrific actions, and that's something that nobody should tolerate. And so that is your artificial intelligence / AI Hitler news, I guess, of the week. And in Russia news, and yes, I know our deep dive basically is talking about Russia just a little bit, but this is actually something different than our deep dive. But in Russia news, this is interesting and somewhat depressing. Big tech is somewhat resuming supporting Russia. Now, here's what's going on. This is coming from Tom's Hardware, and I think this is important news. Multiple reports in Russian media assert that Intel, which ceased doing business inside Russia and Belarus, Intel being the chip maker, basically ceased doing business inside Russia and Belarus due to U.S. sanctions levied due to the Ukraine war, has now resumed allowing driver and software downloads inside that country. In the immediate aftermath of the U.S. sanctions, Russian users were previously unable to download Intel software. These reports also indicate that Microsoft has now quietly re-enabled automatic Windows 11 updates for Russian users as well. Quote, there have been no recent changes to our operations, end quote. And that's according to an Intel spokesperson talking to Tom's Hardware. And there's a bit of an important qualifier there. Quote, in February and March of 2022, Intel suspended all shipments to customers in Russia and Belarus, respectively. In April 2022, Intel announced that it was suspending its business operations in Russia, end quote. And then they continue on, and I quote, Intel continues to comply with all applicable export regulations and sanctions in the country in which it operates. This includes compliance with the sanctions and export controls against Russia and Belarus issued by U.S. and allied nations. Access to resources that meet driver update needs, such as Intel Download Center and Intel Download Support Assistant, are part of Intel's warranty obligations, end quote. And this gets interesting because sources close to the matter, basically talking to Tom's Hardware, say that Intel did initially block downloads in Russia for the software mentioned in the statement. The company restored access in the latter portion of last year, 2022. That justifies Intel's statement that the changes weren't quote unquote recent. The Intel driver and support assistant downloads are now freely available to Russian users due to Intel's warranty obligations. Now, Russia media reports indicate that Intel's initial block on downloads began on February 25th of 2022, and it appears to be based on the user's geographic location. As such, both individuals and companies in Russia couldn't access downloads from Intel's official site, so they had to spoof their IP addresses by using VPNs and other means, or find copies of the drivers stored in various forums. According to Russian media, experts contended that Intel's block prevented the company from fulfilling its warranty obligations to Russian users. Now, Avestia and CNews, both are Russian media, reported that it could access the Intel download portal without spoofing anything as of January 11, 2023. However, it had to find the download section through Yandex or Google, as the main Intel Russia site is still not directly available. The report also claims that Microsoft has now quietly resumed allowing Windows 11 updates within the country, even though it doesn't allow downloading the operating system. Microsoft responded to queries about re-enabled Windows 11 updates with the following statement to Tom's Hardware, and I quote, as we shared previously, we have stopped all new product and service sales in Russia and are complying with sanctions from the EU, UK, and US. That's according to Microsoft. Microsoft's statement didn't address the issue of whether or not it had re-enabled updates for Russian users. It only pertains to the sale of new products and services, and the provided blog post also doesn't mention Microsoft's policy for Windows Update, which was previously disabled. This was pointed out to Microsoft, and Tom's Hardware asked for specific clarification about its Windows Update policy. The company said it had nothing further to share at that time. And so this is really, I think, an interesting one in the sense that while obviously a lot of these sanctions are in place, if they're honoring warranty obligations, to Russia, shouldn't that stop too? I mean, if we're putting a full court press on Russia, Belarus, and any Russian allies, and aligning ourselves with European Union, NATO, United Kingdom, obviously here in the United States, then it would beg to differ that, it would beg to be reasoned, I guess, that, they shouldn't be getting access to this as well. And so We're going to see where this goes, but if this is a indicator that big tech is slowly resuming operations in some way, shape, or form within Russia, even if they're not directly selling there, I don't think that's really going, being aligned with the spirit of support of Ukraine, as obviously they are fending off the Russians right now. So we're going to see where this goes. This is an interesting one. You know, I'll keep you up to date here on the deep dive, but we're just going to see where this goes. And so that is your unfortunate big news, or big tech helping Russian news of the week. And in ransomware news, and yes, I'm glad to be giving you good ransomware news, we have good news on that front. Now, this is coming from Bleeping Computer, and here's what's going on in the world of ransomware this week. Ransomware gangs extorted from victims about $456.8 million through 2022, which is a huge number, but it's a drop of roughly 40% from the record-breaking $765 million recorded in the previous 2 years. And to be fair, those were a bit skewed. We had a mad rush to work from home. The pandemic dropped a bomb, essentially, in the entire technological community, whether you're working remote, whether you're in tech or not. It was a huge thing. And so we're starting to see adjustments. But according to data from blockchain analytics company Chainalysis, this drastic decline in ransomware profits is not driven by fewer attacks, but the victims refusing to pay the attackers. And that is the crux of this. Now, this year, or that year specifically, was marked by the end of the Conti ransomware gang operations and the emergence of new ransomware as a service players like Royal, Play, and Black Basta. Meanwhile, the operators of Lockbit, Hive, Cuba, Black Cat, and Ragnar maintained a steady flow of victims throughout 2022. Despite the multiple extortion tactics employed by the ransomware operators, so for example, file encryption, denial of service attacks, threats of leaking stolen data, or to inform data protection authorities of a breach, a growing number of victims have simply refused to meet the threat actors' demands. Cyber intelligence firm Coveware says that there's an identifiable trend since 2019 in its stats showing that victims' paying rates are constantly dropping. In 2019, 76% of ransomware victims chose to pay the ransom, while only 24% dealt with the consequences instead. This trend changed in 2022 as 59% of victims chose not to pay the ransom. So overall, I think this is good news. Less organizations are negotiating with the terrorists, and that's never a bad thing. But this also begs the question, what's the next evolution of this? What new tactics are we going to see? And what's really interesting is, I think that, and what wasn't mentioned by Bleeping Computer or in other articles that I researched before I did this particular news bit, was that I think one of the direct impacts of this is the war in Ukraine. And I will give you some anecdotal evidence for that. We had a client in my day job, and obviously my day job is not the radio show, although I do love doing this and talking to you. We had a client at the end of 2021, just after Christmas, that got ransomed, and we entered into negotiations with the attackers, and we were able to string them along until Russia invaded Ukraine. Now, the client that we were dealing with, we were able to knock down and negotiate down that ransom to basically a swallowable amount, an amount that individual was willing to pay. But once Russia invaded Ukraine, my client basically said, screw that, I am not paying the Russians anything. They're terrorists, they're invading Ukraine, there's no way now I'm going to pay. And so we simply ghosted them, we ditched them. And that is something that I think is just important to really understand here, is that I think the war in Ukraine has changed that. A lot of people look at ransomware gangs as being solely out of Russia or aligned with Russia, when quite frankly, that's not always the case. But I think there's a perception out there that if you are dealing with ransomware gangs, you're dealing with Russians, and therefore you're not going to pay. I do think that skewed the numbers a bit. We'll see. But again, whether it's the stigma of the Russians or not, right now, the question is, what's the next evolution that's going to come around, that's going to give people another sense of urgency to say, well, you know what? Oh my God, I really should pay, even though I don't want to. And so we're waiting for that. We're trying to anticipate that. And I think that's interesting. If you have a thought on that, I'd love to hear it too. you know, as we are kicking around possible options about how we could really not enforce, but really attempt to extort somebody, from that. And then how are we going to defend against that? So there you go. That's your ransom news of the week. It's a good thing. The trends are down for 2022, even though there are still an increasing number of victims. The payouts are less, which means they're either going to get more aggressive or they're going to shift up and change tactics. So we'll see what happens. But overall, hopefully that trend continues for 2023 and we see nothing new and damaging hitting the world. And so that is your ransomware news of the week. And before we head over to the next segment, I wanted to let you know, and I've done this in a couple of shows, and I keep being reminded to do this, and I always forget. Basically, if you didn't know, I put out content on a daily basis, not just here on the radio where you're listening to me, but actually I put it quite a lot of places, daily podcasts and videos on some of the latest trends, technology, cybersecurity, privacy, all these kinds of things I keep day to day. And some of the segments that I do for my news section or even my breaches of the week every Sunday gets translated into this show. But I do this as essentially a labor of love. You know, I don't have any kind of monetization anywhere. I just do it to keep people informed and to keep everybody interested. But you can find me basically on Twitter or Facebook at @NickAESP or on LinkedIn and YouTube at @NickEspinoza. And please follow me. I'd love to basically get a shout out from you and you know, send me a message or whatever it is. But I do content daily and I hope you guys enjoy it. And so that is my quick blurb.
You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM. And now for breaches of the week. And if you have a data breach to report that's local to you or the major news might have missed it, please, by all means, send it to me, and I'm glad to give you a shout out and include it in the radio show and possibly a daily video. And you can find me on Twitter and Facebook at @NickAESP. Again, that's @NickAESP. Or you can email questions at securityfanatics.com. Again, that's questions at securityfanatics.com. And I'm more than happy to include your data breach and give you a shout out on the air. With that, let's begin.
And this week in breaches is absolutely nuts. But before we begin, I'd like to thank the following people that sent me a lot of this information. And that would be Andy Jenkinson, Jay Dance, Barrett Peterson, and Scott Neuberger. Guys, thank you very much. And if you have a tip for me, please send it my way, and I'll give you a shout out here as well. Moving on, let's get going because this is a crazy week. First, we're talking about the Diligent Corporation, and this looks like a big supply chain breach because it was reported that Diligent software was accessed and data was downloaded, and one of their customers that is reporting right now is UC Health. This is part of UCLA, a major hospital system, obviously, in Southern California. So we'll see where this goes, but heads up, Diligent is reporting, and I promise you, we're going to see more. Moving on, let's talk about Zendesk. You might have heard of them. They're a big tech company. On January 19th, basically of this year, reports began to surface about a potential Zendesk data breach. While the company has yet to publicly confirm that it was a target of a cyber attack, some of the company's customers reported receiving emails informing them of a data breach. Based on the currently available information, we are talking about customer account information being leaked. After confirming that consumer data was leaked, Zendesk did indeed begin sending out data breach notification emails, and that's about all we have right now. So we'll see where that goes, but this is obviously just really recent in the news, Zendesk looking like they got hit. Moving on, let's talk about Charter Communications, one of the larger telecom companies in the United States, because they said one of their third-party vendors suffered from a security breach after data from that company was basically showing up on a hacker forum. This past Thursday, a forum user posted information allegedly stolen from the company that included names, account numbers, addresses, and more for about 550,000 customers of Charter Communication. Obviously, that's rather large. Heads up to you if you use Charter for all your ISP and telecom needs. Moving on, let's talk about Zacks Investment Research, because Zacks discovered at the end of last year that some customer records had been accessed without authorization. An internal investigation into the incident determined that a threat actor gained access to the network somewhere between November of 2021 through August of 2022, almost a year. Now, it's unclear if any data was stolen, but the information in the breach included full names, addresses, phone numbers, numbers, email addresses, and passwords for the Zacks.com website. So if you've done any research or been a participant in Zacks, heads up to you. You may be out there. Moving on. Let's talk about a company called MScripts. On January 17th of this year, they filed notice of breach with the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Office of Civil Rights. This is a healthcare breach after determining that confidential consumer information entrusted to that company was accessible by an unauthorized party. Based on their official filing, the incident likely resulted in unauthorized parties gaining access to consumer-protected health information and possibly other sensitive types. After confirming that data was leaked, they also started sending out letters to impacted individuals. So heads up to you if you use MScripts, I'm assuming for all your prescription needs. Moving on, let's talk about Stratford University. Because on January 26th of this year, they filed a notice of data breach with the Attorney General of Maine after that institution learned that it basically had been ransomed. There's a ransomware compromise, and here we are. Now, based on their filing, the incident resulted in an unauthorized party gaining access to first and last names, phone numbers, addresses, email addresses, dates of birth, social identification, student identification numbers, passport numbers, and social security numbers as well. After confirming that consumer data was leaked, Stratford began sending out data breach notification letters to all individuals. Moving on, let's talk about Insulet, because this week just doesn't stop for healthcare. Insulet has issued an alert for a data breach that may have compromised the health data of thousands of users of its Omnipod-insulin pump. Now, the device maker notified users and filed a report with HHS on January 5th. And according to that database, they are basically looking at 29,000 Omnipod-users. So if you have an Omnipod-insulin pump by Insulet, you better check in. You could be compromised. I hate to say that. Moving on. Let's talk about Lutheran Social Services of Illinois. On January 25th, Lutheran Social Services of Illinois filed a notice of data breach with the Attorney General of Maine following a ransomware attack that compromised the confidential patient information on their network. Basically, according to the filing, what we're talking about are names, dates of birth, social security, financial account information, driver's license information, biometric information, medical diagnosis and treatment information, as well as health insurance information. After confirming this was leaked, they began sending out breach letters as well. So not a good week, again, for healthcare, Lutheran Social Services of Illinois. But let's switch to banking, because the Bank of Eastern Oregon is also up on the chopping block this week, because on January 20th, they filed a notice with the Attorney General of Montana after learning that an employee email account containing confidential customer information was accessed by an unauthorized party. Based on the company's official filing, the incident resulted in an unauthorized party gaining access to consumer-sensitive information. We don't yet know what that information is at the moment, but they are sending out notification letters as well. So heads up, Bank of Eastern Oregon customers, there you go.
As we take a quick break for a public service announcement, we'll be back right after that.